Daniel in the Kitchen talks about food. Daniel in the Kitchen talks recipes. Daniel in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions on this show. Thanks for joining us today. We have been part of this KHOI Community Radio experience here for a long, long time. KHOI is part of our community, and we are glad to be a part of it. So, welcome to a hot and steamy Iowa summer.
Yep, the heat is coming on.
It certainly is. And while you're sitting there enjoying this fine show, we want to remind you that community radio really is community radio, and that means you are not only the recipients, but you are the supporters. You, because of your donations, your memberships, that's why we exist, and it's a fine thing for this community to have. We want to ask you during this time to become a member. If you're not a member already and you've been listening, well, time to get on your pony, eh? Yeah, it is.
Pony it up. Yeah.
It is, too. And if you have been a member all along, we thank you for your support. A basic KHOI membership is just $60. That's about 16 cents a day. You can do that. That's a bargain. And if you contribute just $5 a month, you cover your membership practically painlessly while sustaining your local radio station at the same time. Or give some more, $20 a month. Become a friend of KHOI. And think of a number at random and put lots of zeros behind it. You can donate that, too, and we will appreciate your support. You can go to khoifm.org. That's the website, and you will find a donate button there. Or call 515-292-2878 for more information or to donate, too. We are in our new studio here KHOI at 622 Douglas Avenue, the house in the neighborhood with the electric guitar on top of the roof.
Right in downtown Ames.
Right in downtown Ames. We are part of your community. So thanks for listening to Donna Lana Kitchen at this fine radio station. You know, Donna, June is Dairy Month because because I grew up in Wisconsin, I figured that was kind of like, that was official. That is. June is Dairy Month. I have lots of cows in my background.
Me too. Lana and I have been milkmaids for many lifetimes, as I like to say.
Families and aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas, we like our cows. It's kind of how
Yours a Holstein family?
Yeah, the big black and white kind.
Well, mine were two, but before that, Guernseys.
Oh, that so was nice.
His first job out of college at Illinois, University of Illinois, was to run the Illinois State Guernsey Breeders Association.
That's an important thing.
Oh, yes, he was always very proud of that.
Well, in honor of June is Dairy Month, and also to remind people that we all need a little butter for our bread, we're going to listen to a poem here. So, have at it. The King's Breakfast by A.A. Milne. The king asked the queen, and the queen asked the dairymaid, "Could we have some butter for the royal slice of bread?" The queen asked the dairymaid. The dairymaid said, "Certainly. I'll go and tell the cow before she goes to bed." The dairymaid, she curtsied and went and told the Alderney, "Don't forget the butter for the royal slice of bread." The Alderney said sleepily, "You better tell His Majesty that many people nowadays like marmalade instead." The dairymaid said, "Fancy," and went to Her Majesty. She curtsied to the Queen and turned a little red. "Excuse me, Your Majesty, for taking of the liberty, but marmalade is tasty if it's very thickly spread." The Queen said, "Oh," and went to His Majesty. "Talking of the butter for the royal slice of bread, many people think that marmalade is nicer."
Would you like to try a little marmalade instead? The king said, bother. And then he said, oh, dearie me. The king sobbed, oh, dearie me, and went back to bed. Nobody, he whimpered, could call me a fussy man. I only want a little bit of butter for my bread. The queen said, there, there, and went to the dairymaid. The dairymaid said, there, there, and went to the shed. The cow said, there, there, I didn't really mean it. Here's milk for his porringer and butter for his bread. The queen took the butter and brought it to his majesty. The king said, butter, eh? And bounced out of bed. Nobody, he said, as he kissed her tenderly. Nobody, he said, as he slid down the banisters. Nobody, my darling, could call me a fussy man, but I do like a little bit of butter to my bread.
That was the king's breakfast, and yes, we all do. We appreciate
your support. You like
marmalade,
too, though. I didn't know.
That's true.
I like marmalade and butter. I didn't know it was an either-or situation.
I suggest both.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
Well, so joining us at the kitchen table today is Deborah Buchalter, staff member and Ames resident, staff member for Practical Farmers of Iowa, and longtime Donalana Kitchen listener. Welcome, Deb.
Thank you, Donna and Lana. It is so good to be here with you today.
Well, tell us what you do. Tell us what you do for Practical Farmers of Iowa.
Absolutely. I sincerely appreciate this opportunity and have been a longtime listener and enjoyer of KHOI programming. And I just have to say that on behalf of my staff, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about how much I appreciate your radio station and program because they're tired of hearing it from me in office. So my name is Deborah Buchalter, and I am the membership and office assistant for Practical Farmers of Iowa. And just to tell you a little bit about this organization, we were founded in the mid-80s by some local farmers, and we are a farmer-led, member-based nonprofit agriculture organization. So I think there's a lot of similarities between what our organization does and what KHOI does as far as being member-based and community-supported. And I'll probably draw some references to that, some parallels to that as we spend time together today. Just to tell you a little bit about Practical Farmers of Iowa, our vision is equipping farmers to build resilient farms and communities. And so we really believe that farmers are the experts, and we develop programming around the work that they're doing on their farms in order for them to share their experiences with other farmers. And a couple of main areas that our programming focuses on is what we call field days, and those are free and open to the public, and those are opportunities for anybody to go to a farm and hear from a farmer's own words, his own mouth, his or her own mouth, their experiences, their successes, and their failures, and often specific enterprises or things that they're experimenting with there on their farm. Another area of programming that we focus heavily on is what was called on-farm research, and that is an amazing opportunity where our members tell us what experiments they would like to try on their farm. And, you know, they really guide our programming about things that they are curious about, things that they're passionate about, challenges that they're experiencing. And we help them set up trials on their farm. So they're able to do, experiments and tests and record data and draw conclusions from it. And then the full circle effect of that on-farm research is they share it publicly and for free with anybody. And that is just a beautiful thing of information sharing. All of that, the research reports that are created from those on-farm trials are free and on our website. And it's just very empowering to be able to access real-world experiments that farmers are doing that are trying to make them more profitable, more resilient, strengthen their family farms and communities. And it's just a beautiful thing. It reminds me of a saying that goes something like, when we all do better, we all do better. And so this idea of figuring things out that make you more successful and sharing that with your neighbors. And I think that KHOI does a lot of that, of sharing information and helping us all have better lives for low cost or free to the public. But it is supported through memberships. And so just appreciate this opportunity to come on and sing my praises for KHOI and hopefully inspire and encourage people to support your program.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. I have to say a good word about the field days. Well, to have an invitation to visit other farms around the state, it's amazing what people are growing, what their interests are, all of the things. There are things growing that I know that I didn't know existed, and there are techniques that I didn't know existed, and people are, and you think Iowa, you think of, oh, that's just corn and beans and large scale agriculture. There are lots of other things going on now. There are berries and goats and honey and different watershed considerations and different soil considerations and people making their own equipment and making their own tests and growing their own, well, growing their own seeds. And there are just all kinds of good things going on. Deb, can you give us some information on how people can contact you and find out more about these field days? Because like you said, they are open to everybody.
To the public.
Absolutely. And I appreciate the opportunity to share that if folks are interested in getting connected, learning more about PFI, or requesting one of our field day guides sent to your mailbox, you can find us online. Our website is practicalfarmers.org. You can call our office. The phone number here is 515-232-5661. And we have a human answering the phone during normal business hours, so we would love to talk to you. And you're also welcome just to shoot me an email directly to Deborah@practicalfarmers.org. We'd love to get our resources into community members' hands, so we would love to help get you connected more.
Well, I want to add that, you know, part of, since the avowed mission of the Donna Lana Kitchen Show is to help people understand more about where their food comes from and encouraging them to cook and eat healthy foods, that PFI has been a large resource for us. And over the years, we've talked a lot about different field days and different techniques and different people involved in Practical Farmers of Iowa. And also, Practical Farmers of Iowa is now the sort of co-producer of our podcast. So our radio show, in addition to continuing to be a radio show, is now also in a podcast format. And I just feel like PFI is an infinite source of inspiration in the food community. So,
yeah, you're concerned or familiar with PFI members. As I understand it, you don't have to be a farmer to join PFI.
No, they let me join.
Yeah, they let me join. I think we classify as friends of farmers, but absolutely, Lana. So we are a big tent organization, and we want members of all types. You know, our membership is heavily farmers or aspiring and beginning farmers, but we also have a lot of members that are non-operating landowners, friends of farmers, and just partners of farmers in this organization. And I appreciate one of the things, Lana, that you described is just the diversity of agriculture that used to be present on the Iowa landscape or the Midwest landscape. And, you know, similar to the programming that KHOI provides, one thing I really appreciate about the KHOI's programming is the diversity of subjects, of viewpoints, of speakers. It really has opened my eyes to a lot of different perspectives that I may not have, been exposed to otherwise. And I think that PFI is similar to that in that we have a little bit of something for everyone. You know, whether you're a beginning and aspiring farmer and you need help getting access to land or capital, if you are a retiring farmer and you're looking at transitioning your land, we have different programs and resources available to that. We definitely have conventional row crop farmers and organic urban farmers. We have folks that are implementing conservation practices on their farms and are partnering with other local government groups to help acquire capital to make those things possible. We have a lot of different livestock farms with differing scales and species, and definitely food production, vegetable production, orcharding, agroforestry, silvopasture. That's just a glimpse of the different topics of the field days that we're hosting this year. And it's amazing that, you know, when you go to a PFI field day, you might be going to learn about a specific thing. And then you, while you're there, you get exposed to a whole array of other ideas, people, businesses. And one of the goals is to just spark curiosity and to encourage people to be curious about their environment, be curious about their business or their career, ask questions of people that are successful and how they got to be that way. And another important guiding principle is partnering. And so partnering with people that are excellent at an area that perhaps you're not, and that you don't have to be an expert in everything. But when we function in a community, we can connect with other people that will help us be more successful in their lives through their skill set.
Well, I think another important parallel between KHOI and Practical Farmers of Iowa is we're very local organizations. I mean, there are a lot of wonderful things going on nationally, especially if you turn on the TV, you'll hear all the good, the bad, and the ugly. But locally, I find that for my an antidote to the doom scrolling when you get on the internet or when you watch television is that locally a lot of really, really wonderful things are happening. And by participating and there are many other organizations in Ames too that are strictly local people, and it's a way to meet your neighbors, to learn more about your community. And you know, this is an agricultural community, and though specifically in Ames most people are not farmers, we are surrounded by farmers, we are supported by farmers. It's really incumbent upon us to understand our neighbors and their concerns and their work. And after all, what goes on to the fields is largely circulating in the water and the air and the soil for all of us. So it's really fortunate, and I really recommend picking some local organization that is volunteer run or like PFI, very locally grassroots kind of thing, because that way you really get to know your neighbors. And then we build, no matter what's going on in the rest of the country, at least you can be effective at the local level by knowing your neighbors and understanding the local concerns. So this is a shout out for all of the Ames organizations that, you know, bring people together and make our city and our community and our countryside right under our noses more healthy and vibrant.
Healthy and vibrant. That's a good idea. Deb, where did you grow up? How did you get interested in agriculture? And I think there's a story about coffee in there some parts. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Great. Absolutely. Well, I am proud to say that I am an Iowa native born and raised. I was born in the beautiful river town of Iowa Falls, Iowa, which is just about an hour northeast of Ames. And I am very fortunate that I was a child of the 80s. I grew up during a time where I feel like life was a slower pace and a little bit simpler, and just really grateful for the childhood that I got to have. You know, when I was a young child, I remember we had a very vibrant small town. And I think that it's a pretty typical situation of small towns in Iowa, where you had a bustling Main Street, you had a variety of different local industries that were thriving, there are opportunities for employment, and just a lot of a local, you know, you went to your Main Street to buy your stationery and your paint. And, you know, there was retail stores that specialized in like niche markets. I just remember there was always cars parked along Main Street and people walking and a local swimming pool and just a lot of community events and opportunities. And, you know, as a child, you don't really understand what's going on around you. And as you get older, and have a broader context of what's going on, whether it's the economy or industries or education. And in hindsight, help, you know, with the context in hindsight, you kind of understand the changes that were happening. And I definitely remember industries closing in the late 80s and early 90s and leaving town, and Walmart moving in. And we had a couple of factories that were really thriving. We had a luggage factory and we had a farmland pork, and those closed down in my early high school years and moved to different countries. And I just remember childhood friends whose parents worked at those factories, and then all of a sudden were unemployed. And just the not only the economic impact on their households and the communities, but the loss of hope and the loss of opportunity that were experienced. And I think Iowa Falls went through a period of declining. You know, there was a lot of empty stores on Main Street, and that has since changed. There's been a lot of beautiful things that have happened in that town. And if you go down Main Street today, the storefronts are all full and the parking spaces are full once again. So I feel like that's just a great example of a small town that struggled but has endured and been resilient.
And it's a pretty little town.
It's so beautiful.
With the river, it's really pretty.
My understanding is it has limestone cliffs and maybe a type of cliff pigeon that doesn't exist anywhere else on the planet. So some very unique natural features.
Oh, good.
And I'll be honest that I grew up surrounded by corn and soybeans. I grew up during a time when hog confinements were being developed all around me. And so I was surrounded by it, but I wasn't really connected to it, or I wasn't aware of it because my parents specifically didn't work in agriculture. My dad was in construction and carpentry. And so I was aware of it, but I didn't understand it. I didn't understand its impact and its importance. I moved to Ames in 1996 and went to Iowa State, graduated from there. I worked in social services for about a year after graduating and realized quickly that I didn't have thick enough skin for that. And so my path took a turn that I couldn't have planned for, but couldn't have worked out better. And I started working for a local coffee company, and at that time it was called Bergie's Espresso Cafe. And that was my first step into the specialty coffee industry. And I was just fully immersed. I had an amazing boss, slash mentor, Steve and Ann Bergeson. And they really were, they were about coffee, and they wanted to recreate the cafe culture back here in Iowa. They experienced it in Austria. I believe it was in the 80s. And it was just a culture of community and coming together, of sharing ideas, and it was available to everybody. It didn't matter if you're rich or poor. You could come together and sit and share ideas. And one of the principles that mentor of mine, Steve, taught me was just to be a lifelong learner and really to ask questions and be hungry to understand systems and history and how we got to where we are today. And so really encouraged a lot of learning through working in coffee. I had the opportunity to be a coffee roaster for them. And as part of that role, I got to travel to coffee producing countries. My first trip was to Costa Rica, and my second one was to Uganda, Africa. And it was just my first taste of visiting a coffee producing country and to meet firsthand with farmers and members of the cooperatives and just understand their agriculture system in coffee and how it affected the community. And, you know, I was exposed to new ideas and people and ways of doing things that were mind blowing. And I worked for that coffee company for just shy of, I believe, 18 years. And during that time, one of our accounts was Practical Farmers of Iowa. So through my interactions of delivering them fresh roasted coffee, I learned more about the organization. And I started volunteering for them many years before I came to work here, and, you know, was inspired by PFMI members. I remember doing a coffee sampling at Wheatfield Cooperative, and Maria Roseman encouraged me to get involved with Practical Farmers of Iowa. And I told her that I wasn't a farmer, I didn't have any experience, and she said, it will be worth every ounce of energy to get to their annual conference, to hear what some of these people are talking about, she just really encouraged me to just do it, to just show up at her annual conference. And I did. And over the next couple of years, then some opportunities came open at Practical Farmers of Iowa. And I just really believe in this organization and their mission and their approach, and applied for a job. And in 2017, I came to work here full time, and very grateful for that.
Well, I think also I want to point out that Berge's is another fine local small business. You know, I mean, of course we got Starbucks, but you know, if you drink your coffee from, there are numerous Berge coffee places. Even in the hospital is Berge's coffee, and at the gas station out by Lowe's is Berge's coffee, and there's more. They're a good local business family. So
see,
and coffee's good too.
And coffee, we forget, most everything that we use is somehow related to agriculture, and I'm awful glad that you found your way through that kind of agriculture to Practical Farmers of Iowa. We are glad you did. Thank you for being with us today, Deb. It was great to talk to you. We've been talking to Deborah Buchalter, staff member and all-around good person.
And Practical KHOI Farmers. Listener.
Yes. Thank you for your support. Thank you for joining us today. You've been listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. As we mentioned before, it's hot and humid out there, but some people work out in the hot and humidity anyway, and some of those folks bring good things to farmers markets. What did you find at the farmers market
recently?
Oh,
yes. Glory, glory, glory. I love when the farmers market starts again. You know, we've trudged through our long winter, and then of course, you know, when spring first comes, there's not a lot the farmers can bring. But I went last Saturday, and you know, this is just the Ames Farmers Market. Fortunately, almost every local community of any size at all has a farmers market, so it's an event. It's good fun to get out and see everybody. And so this last Saturday, I went in the rain with my umbrella. And I was so gratified. First of all, there's of course our cheese, our famous Lost Lake Farm, Kevin Dietzel's cheese is there, and Kevin had his fresh feta cheese. Yippee! I got so excited.
Iowa feta.
Of course, you know, he makes wonderful, wonderful cheeses, and some of them are, you know, aged, and he makes some soft rind cheeses and some hard cheeses, and, you know, Kevin is as Monty Python would say, blessed are the cheesemakers, right? Kevin is a really excellent cheesemaker, and the feta cheese is so, it's nothing like the imported stuff that you buy in the grocery store. I mean, it's still feta cheese, but it's soft, and here's how Kevin's dairy works. He has, I don't know, less than 25 cows or something, and he rotates them on grass completely, and You can tell Kevin loves his cows. We've had him on the show. In fact, the last time we had him on the show, he was out in the field broadcasting from his telephone, and he actually showed Lana and I a picture of a cow giving birth to a calf.
What timing?
We saw that little guy come into the world. And so needless to say, Kevin's cheese was a big treat at the farmer's market. And then in the next, on one side of him was a booth. I think it's called Stargrass Farm. And he had a huge pile of fresh beets. Oh, my goodness. The sort of more normal 2-inch ones to the baby beets, which I love because they're so tender. So I bought a lot of beets. I bought the feta cheese. And then on the other side of him, Root to Rise Farm had fresh dill. And I think it was Stargrass also had the fresh spring onions, which, yeah, you can buy scallions in the grocery store all year long, but the fresh spring onions are more tender and just delightful. So all I did was boil up the beets. And let me tell you, my delight, you know, the beets that you buy through the rest of the year have traveled a long way to get here, and they are a little aged. You know, so when you boil them, you actually have to use a paring knife to peel the skin off. And it is sort of a pain in the ear. But the fresh beets, when you boil them or roast them, by the time they're done, which is when you can stick a fork through them, you just kind of, you cool them off, run them under cool water, and then you squeeze them a little bit and the skin slips right off. Now that is the sign of a fresh beet. It's a lot easier to peel them and work with them. And of course they have a really, really lively flavor. So I had the beets and then I put on them some balsamic vinegar, some salt, pepper, olive oil. You can cut them up if you want. I didn't cut them up too much, especially because the smaller ones are rather delightful looking. And then I put on lots of dill and lots of chopped up spring onions. And oh, it was so delicious. And then served it with the feta cheese.
Oh,
just kind of, because his cheese is not crumbly, it's kind of dollopy, right? So you just put blobs of it on top of the
I had a taste beets. Of that cheese, and it's not salty.
It is salty, but it's not as salty as what you...
I'm used to feta being quite... Like if you put it in a recipe, you think, oh, leave off the rest of the salt. This is just creamy and nice.
Oh,
and
yeah. It's spring. It's delicious.
Oh, summer. Summer vegetables.
I'm hoping he'll keep producing this all. I never know what... I mean, it's not an aged cheese, so he can produce it. I mean, he's only got so much milk because it's a smallish, you know, very... handmade kind of operation. So, I mean, I'm going to be at the farmer's market next Saturday, and I'm going early, and I'm going to buy a lot of feta cheese.
Very good. It's a good thing to have. Oh, speaking of beets, did you save the greens and eat the greens too?
You know, the greens looked so good. I was like, I have to say I did chop them off and put them in the compost, but not without a lot of guilt because I thought, they were beautiful. Do you have a way you like to cook them?
Whenever I have greens, and I usually go out to the garden, and I end up with a lot more than one kind of green.
True.
I mean, there's kale, there's dandelions. I grow an Italian dandelion that I actually paid money for the seeds for. People think, you're planting dandelion, but actually it's in the chicory family, and it has really nice big leaves. And it's nice to have I have a combination of that. I chop them up and saute them in olive oil with garlic and butter and other good things and salt and pepper. And I like them sauteed and then at the end put in some sort of liquid and let them steam for a little bit. Collards will come later in the season. Any kind of green you can do this too. That's how I like to.
Well, it's true. The beet greens are, they're, as we would say, rather strong.
Yeah.
So if you're mixing them in with other things, it gives a multitude of flavors within the greens. And the greens on these beets are just gorgeous. None of this cracked, wilty, They're beautiful. Beautiful.
And a little splash of balsamic vinegar just a little bit of vinegar in with that. It is quite nice.
By the way, Do you have arugula? How's the arugula? What are you thinking?
I've got arugula. It's uglier than all get out because my flea beetles got into my first picking. So I've got lacy arugula. I know to do well, it.
Maybe that's an extra specialty.
Extra special. So I do have arugula, but it doesn't look all that good this year. So I think my further, plantings later in the year will have a row cover on it because I don't like to spray things. And flea beetles, once they find a place, they're so small you can't even see them. So they're almost like just something you talk about, like a phantom.
Well, because we've had cool weather until 2 days ago, the lettuces at the farmer's market have also been wonderful. Like 2 weeks ago, Stargrass had these amazing, beautiful romaines. And, I took some home and I actually made up my favorite sort of Caesar-ish dressing. And I chomped into the romaine lettuce. And, of course, it tastes nothing like these romaines that I've been buying all winter long. It was just glorious. And then last weekend, Root to Rise Kate had some beautiful, they are like a little butter lettuce, but they were red. Just gorgeous. So I'm sure the lettuces won't last too long in this heat, but right now it's just, and also there are lots of farmers selling plants.
Oh, good.
Lots of different flowers, annuals, some perennials, garden starters. Still, it's not too late. I mean, what would happen if you put your tomato in the garden now?
Oh, it'd be fine. You'd still have later tomatoes, but it'll be off and running. It'll go in the garden. It'll look around at everything.
Herbs.
Yeah, it'll look around at all the other plants and say, well, I better get going here. And it'll be fine. Make sure you water.
I want to recommend that, even if you're not going to venture into the vegetable round, that you do plant what used to be called the kitchen garden, which is a little patch that has all of the fresh herbs right outside the kitchen door. So, I mean, I am not much of a very good gardener. I do like my flowers, but I plant my herbs. So, basils, multiple basils, not just the kind that you buy at the grocery store, but lemon basil, Thai basil, purple basil, globe basil. I keep a bunch of basils. I put in an extra lemon verbena plant this year. I actually doubled my lovage plants. Now, if you listen to us, you have heard Lana and I rave about lovage. We love the lovage. It is easy to grow locally. It is a perennial. Once you get it started, it just goes. It goes the latest in the fall and comes earliest in the spring, and you can't buy it for lovage nor money.
Thank you.
I don't know why, because it's an easy herb to grow.
Yeah.
It's kind of celery-like in flavor, but it's also a little like you would use parsley. It's wonderful. Like I made a tomato soup, just a cream of tomato soup this week. And I steeped the lovage in the milky part of it. So there's because lovage and tomato goes really well together. So it's just such a useful herb. What else did I plant? Thyme. Tarragon is very useful. Some of my friends like Paula and Gio have been getting their tarragon to overwinter. What other herbs do you like to plant?
Well, I always have a little corner for oregano, oregano in the garden, and I have a little plant of marjoram, too. They're kind of the same, marjoram, oregano.
No, well, they kind of look the same.
Oh, yeah.
But marjoram is sweeter. It's called sweet marjoram. It's not, oregano has that nice bite that you want for some things that marjoram doesn't. And I probably use marjoram the way people use basil. I use it dried. I use it all year round. It's wonderful in pork. I season everything with marjoram. I can't get too much of it. So,
good. Good. Oh, and don't forget the chives.
Oh, yes, of course. Chives. And soon, I hope we'll have the garlic scapes.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Stargrass Farm had some at the farmer's market this week already. So,
it's always nice to keep up with what is up and growing. A farmer's market report from Donna. Thank you very much.
Well, and a preview is once Lana and Joe's garlic comes in, we're going to do a garlic show.
Yeah,
things garlic.
Yeah, we're kind of looking forward ahead to the rest of the year. And yes, it is coming, and we like garlic. And I know a lot more people are growing garlic now, too. It's a fun vegetable. you can talk about it with people. So how's your garlic crop going? It's you know, right up there with the weather.
We are keeping the vampires away.
Yeah, it does. It does. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and this is KHOI. You can find out more about KHOI at khoifm.org. And remember to celebrate this station and call 515-292-2878. Become a member. Become a member. Go to our website. Poke the donation button, and you will be part. You will be in good company if you become a member. And thanks to all of you who are members. Thanks to all our supporters. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a very appropriate tune written by a Iowa farmer. Eric Sessions is a fiddler and a vegetable farmer up in the Decorah area. He wrote that great tune. It's called "It's Not the Heat, It's the Humidity." I think we can all we can all relate to that. And he is part of a group called Contratopia. A lot of good musicians, a lot of good things happen. Okay, so we're talking about things that go on here in farmers markets. And a few Donna Lana Kitchen shows ago, we talked about summer berries, and I'd like to talk about some things to put on top of those summer berries. Some people like ice cream, which is absolutely wonderful. But there's whipped cream, Donna. There's whipped cream.
Yeah, the whipped cream you put on top of the berries. The ice cream, you put the strawberries on top of the ice cream. But nothing like whipped cream.
There's quite a science to this, you know. And speaking of science, I'd like to talk a little bit about the science of whipped cream. I'm reading from a book called Cookwise, The Hows and Whys of Successful Cooking, The Science of Cooking Revealed by Shirley O. Courier. And I go to this book when I want to find out why things didn't work, because there's really a reason, there really is reasons why things don't work in the kitchen sometimes, and some of it, there's a reason for it. But whipped cream is pretty foolproof, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wanted to know, why does it get thick? Why does it stick together? Why does a liquid become not a solid, but, well, it is a solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a solid. Okay. And
solid-ish.
Solid-ish. And here she has a, Shirley A. Courier has a little things to say about whipping cream. When air is beaten into cold, heavy cream, the air bubbles formed are coated with water film filled with fat droplets, and more air bubbles are whipped. The film around the bubbles become thinner, and the fat droplets, robbed of their film coating, touch each other and stick together. The whipped cream gets firmer. Eventually, air is beaten into the cream so much that all the air bubbles are lined with fat droplets and stuck together. The big factor in whipped cream is temperature. Cream should be started out cold and stay cold. Chill the bowls, chill the beaters, work in a cool kitchen.
That's an oxymoron.
Yeah. So make sure your kitchen is at least cool when you're whipping cream. Another major factor in producing whipped cream is the amount of fat in the cream. The fat droplets lining the air bubbles are what hold the whipped cream up, so you need a good supply of fat. Half and half has 10 to 18% fat. Light coffee cream has 18 to 30% fat. whipping cream has 30 to 35% fat, and heavy cream has a minimum of 36% fat. You need at least 30% fat to make whipping cream, whipped cream. And there are things to remember. Not every breed of cow has the kind of cream that is extremely whippable. All of it is if it has enough fat. But if you're out looking at your cows, remember, Jerseys and Guernseys produce milk with the highest amount of large fat globules, and Holsteins produce milk with smaller fat globules. So think about those globules.
Yeah, well, the thing is, most of the milk on the market these days, I would say 99%, is Holstein. But of course, I come from a family where my grandfather, who was a dairy farmer, in his older age when his children became the dairy farmers, he would. This was still a little town, Walden, Illinois. He took the cream around house to house in the pony cart because the cream is the cream. You know, it's the best part. It's what everybody wants for butter making. Well, and here's the thing. If you whip your whipped cream too far, it will turn into butter. And once it's turned into butter, you can't really take it back to whipped cream. So that is the only, you want to whip it till it's firm enough to, as they say, stand in peaks. Now you can do it by hand, but it's really tedious. I use either my immersion blender, or I use my mixer, my hand mixer. And of course, my little secret is the bowl I'm mixing it in, I actually drape a little kitchen towel over it because it spatters everywhere.
You've got one of those beaters.
Yeah, I do. But the whipped cream is, you got to go far enough to make it stand in peaks and not be runny, but not too far so you don't get butter.
Right.
Unless you want to make butter, which is fun. Making butter is a fun thing for children to see. They think, where does butter come from? So if you just keep mixing it, you end up with butter.
Yeah. Well, since, as you're growing up, you kind of are figuring things out, and you listen to the adults, and some, I listen to farmers, and people would, oh yeah, he's just got Guernseys, or he's just got Holsteins, and there are positives and negatives for each. The Holsteins give prodigious amounts of milk, and like we mentioned before, Guernseys and Jerseys give more butter fat. So if you want richer milk, maybe a little less of it.
I'm not sure if this is still true, but it used to be that a good farmer with a registered herd of whatever breed they were doing, and usually it's fairly consistent, keeps records on the percentage of butter fat in each cow's milk.
Yeah, you can get a report card.
Like
every
the
day.
Champion, the champions come. I've got a big picture. These are left from my childhood, but a big picture of a Guernsey cow that's the champion of da 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 da. And underneath it, it gives her name and the percentage of butter fat in her milk.
Yeah,
it's important.
It's important.
That cream.
Also, as I figured out when I was little, I believed this for a long time, but guess what, folks? This isn't how it works. I believed that Holsteins, the large black and white cows, are the ones that gave regular and chocolate milk. I figured you'd have to have black to make the chocolate milk. And they had a way of separating out the... It doesn't work that way, folks, but you learn things as you grow up. Yeah. Yeah, butter, a good thing.
Butter.
And we mentioned before, everybody likes a little butter for our bread, and a little butter for our bread here would be a real nice response from our listeners. Become a KHOI member and be part of this nice organization. Yeah.
The butter. Well, you know, I am going to say a little bit about Iowa butter. We do have the Kelowna dairy products, which are sold nationwide, but they are produced here in Iowa. And for the most part, I think they are all grass-based dairy. Ah. So this is something to consider when you're, because not all fats are created equal and not all butter is created equal. And what the cows are fed as, for example, in Kevin Diesel's Lost Lake Farm cheeses. His cows are all grass-fed. Now, when cows only eat grass, which is what they did for thousands of years, and that's what their digestive system is supposed to be doing, instead of eating corn and soybeans and grains, if they are always fed grass, they have a different called fatty acid profile in their butter. And there is some scientific knowledge about eating grass-fed dairy is better for your heart. Because it has something called conjugated linoleic acid, which is, you know, you get into fatty acid profiles in all of the oils. Like, everyone knows that olive oil is healthier for you than, say, cottonseed oil and stuff like that. And you get into the omega-3s versus the omega-6s. And why fatty fish are good for you is because they have a good amount of omega-3s. Or is it sixes? It's the good fat, right? So some of these fats, we all need some fat. Like, the brain has high amounts of fats and needs fats to make us think properly, right? Mm-hmm. So there are good fats and bad fats. And I personally love the Kelowna butters. I don't care if it's salted or unsalted, but it is an Iowa product.
And butters do taste different.
Yes.
So they're, and it's a nice thing to train your palate to deal with that sort of thing. I like that. It's good. And you do things with butters too. You compounded butters means that you add things to it.
Flavors.
Right?
Yes.
Flavors.
Very like good. Like maybe this summer, Lana, when you start drying your wonderful tomatoes, that we can make a paste out of it. And for one stick of butter, if you add 2 tablespoons, more or less, of a flavoring, like a powdered tomato paste, you get a tomato butter.
Good. Oh, not paste.
No, not paste.
Okay,
dry. It has to be dry.
I will dry my tomatoes, put them in herb grinder, spice grinder works
right.
really well.
You could put them in a grinder.
And make sure
mechanical
it's super
grinder.
Dry.
Yeah,
and, you end
and
up
powdery.
With this, yeah. Powder.
And then you just mix that into, I think with a tomato, for example, a salted butter would work better. And then you can have a little sandwich, a little tea sandwich with some toast and some tomato butter.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
I've been reading I'll finish reading it and talk about it on a future show, a book about the history of tea, and they talk about tea sandwiches and the whole history. Actually, the history of tea, we think of it as such a genteel sort of thing, but wars were fought, countries came and went, emperors were deposed.
Caffeine.
Pirates attacked people on the high seas, all because of tea. So anyway, we'll talk about tea on a future show. I think that's a good idea. Also, I want to remind you to support this fine radio station. Become a member. It's only $60 a year. You can do that. Become a member and you'll feel good about yourself. You can come down and visit the station. We are at 622 Douglas Avenue. And like I mentioned before, we are the host of the electric guitar on the roof.
And we are an all-volunteer station. So I'm sure there are opportunities for further community volunteering in addition to signing up for your membership.
Certainly. Lots of things need to be done. If you want to have something to say on the air, there probably would be a chance for you to do that too, because I think it's important for us to keep talking to one another. Thanks to Deb Buchholter for joining us today and talking about Practical Farmers of Iowa. You've been listening to The Dunalana Kitchen. We come to you live every Tuesday. We're repeated at 7 p.m. on this fine radio station. We had music by Contratopia. We'll go out with a nice waltz called The South of France. Eat good food and enjoy life.